the Asherah Grove, where we discuss the intersection of women, divinity, and power within the context of Mormonism. I'm your host, Suzette Smith. Before I get into the content of this episode, I want to briefly address the recent response to my voice on this podcast. I am aware that my voice is upsetting to many Mormon feminists in the community. It was never my intention in hosting this podcast to create unrest or frustration. I hope for greater peace in the Mormon feminist community, and to that end, I'm going to stop podcasting for now. I have already had this episode prepared, so I'm going to go ahead and post it, but then I'll step away until a better time. I hope this will ease the tension that has existed in the past weeks. Thank you to Bill Real for his support of the podcast and his personal support of me on my journey. I'm unable at this time to address my situation with Exponent 2 specifically, but my attorney and I have drafted a statement to the media. I will include this at the end of this episode if anyone is interested. This episode is going to dive into a talk given by Sharon Eubank in 2014 called This is a Woman's Church. I heard the recording of this talk after it was given in Fair Mormon at the conference in August of 2014. I was impressed at that time, and I thought she had some really compelling ideas. The Ensign published a shortened version of the talk in August of 2016. It was called Being a Woman, An Eternal Perspective. It noted that the content was taken from President Eubank's original talk at Fair, but as I read it, it felt different to me. It felt sort of sappy and not really compelling, at least not as compelling as I had remembered. Maybe it's all those calla lilies that the Mormon Church demands in putting in all books and articles written by and for women. When Sharon was called to the General Relief Society presidency in April of 2017, I was reminded of her talk and of this article. So I printed them out side by side so I could really take a look at what was going on in these two different versions. The Ensign article had used President Eubanks's words, but they had chopped it all up and rearranged them. The Ensign used subheadings and bullet points within their arrangement, and I felt like it created this different perspective that was intended in the original talk. The most interesting parts of the talk, the most interesting ideas, at least for me, weren't even included in the Ensign article at all. These ideas were the need for better language around women's roles, the need for better inclusion of young women, and the concept of partnership between men and women in the church. Instead, the article focused on the roles of women and the goodness of women. It started off telling women why the church is empowering and why it's not restrictive. It then tells LDS women that other women, meaning women of the world, are hungry for this doctrine, and they really want what the church has. The article then lays out the different roles and attributes and responsibilities of women by naming them as daughter, sister, mother, wife. It uses the words God's doctrine a lot, but it never really defines what this means. It clarifies that the church practices, it clarifies the church practices around women, like what the church does with women, but it does this by purely quoting men, which I found irritating. It ends with three suggestions for women that can help them in their practice of equality in the church. One, keep in mind the big picture. Two, stay faithful in opposition. And three, seek the Holy Ghost. I was disheartened by these suggestions because I felt the church was just saying, if you don't feel that you're equal, just look back at the church with an open mind and a faithful heart, and you'll understand how you really are equal in time. The Ensign article seemed to be a watered-down version of President Eubanks' talk, which for me was a watered-down version of the sexism we see in the church. I wish the Ensign would have just printed the actual talk she gave in 2014. But My conclusion is the church wants to frame its narrative around women. The church does not want to use suggestions given by individual people. And the church does not, or the church does, want to remind women that they are special, that they have a place, and that the church is empowering them. I don't like it. So for the sake of getting a little deeper and exploring some of President Eubanks' more compelling ideas, I'm going to go back to the original talk and walk through it with you. There are some things I liked in the talk and some things I didn't, but I do think her perspective is interesting and certainly worth reviewing. I'll start with this quote from President Eubank. Not all of us are going to agree with each other, and this is a beautiful forum for us to talk about things, express our opinions, and be respectful, but also be different. She uses an allusion to the arrival in the Salt Lake Valley as she continues. The right place doesn't mean there aren't going to be blinding salt flats, or black crickets, or all kinds of naysayers, or killing frosts, or all those sorts of things. Our doctrine allows us to believe that everyone is valuable. Everyone has unique individual gifts. The Lord's plan allows for everybody to use their gifts, and we can respect our differences. It's in that spirit that I'll discuss her words. President Eubank states that she will be speaking in her own voice and from her own experiences. She states that she has heard that the LDS Church is oppressive, that it's stodgy and conservative, that many people think it is a toxic environment for women. But in her experience, the church has been incredibly empowering. She then launches into what she calls LDS doctrine, and some of her thoughts I like very much. Like this one. Mormonism believes that we existed as intelligences, and that we always existed. We chose to ally ourselves with God, and God put us on the path of exaltation. I like the idea that we chose God, and God chose us. Perhaps we asked God to be our mentor as we moved in our own growth way. And perhaps together we came up with experiences like this earth that would allow us to progress in the ways we wanted to progress. Of course, agency is central to all of this. President Eubank then goes on to say that she identifies herself in relation to gender as a woman, and that as a woman, she has attributes, responsibilities, and stewardships. This is where we disagree a bit. The idea of gender roles has never resonated with me. I can believe that individuals have certain attributes, and because of these attributes, they may take on certain responsibilities and stewardships. But I don't like the idea that all stewardships or responsibilities are relegated to one gender or the other. Still, her ideas are interesting. She believes that women have certain roles, and these responsibilities have to do with binding, connecting, bridging, and gluing. I think this resonates with some people, but not with others. I do think that connecting and bridge building might be the gifts of certain individuals, but it's hard for me to believe that this is the role of all womankind. At this point in her talk, she discusses the roles of daughter, sister, wife, and mother. This is also outlined in the Ensign article. Let me pause to take a little bit of umbrage with the title mother. The LDS Church holds mother in the highest of esteems, but the church also realizes that not all women will be mothers. So they stretch the boundaries of this word to include all women. President Eubanks says that mother equals creator, and that Eve was so desirous to be a mother that she sacrificed Eden for it. And Adam called her the mother of all living before she ever bore a child. Of course, this is a throwback to Sherry Dew. She goes on to say that whether you have children in this life or not, when you have your endowment, you become a mother. It's the gospel of Jesus Christ that gives us the inherent title of mother. Again, I don't exactly agree with President Eubank here. I don't see the gospel as the only place that gives women the title of mother or honors motherhood. I think that many faiths and secular groups do the same. And I think that we honor mothers for exactly what they are, the bearers of children. As a woman who is not a mother, the bearer of children, I don't understand why we just can't empower the word mother. Why we can't empower the word woman? Why we can't say that woman equals creator? Why can't we just give power to the entire word of womanhood? I often feel like the church is trying to force me back into a role or into a box where I just don't fit and a box that I don't want to be in. But because the church doesn't give women priesthood ordination, they have to do something for them, so I suppose they chose motherhood. President Eubank moves on with her talk to discuss the need to acquire a body. And this is where she goes on a bit of a tangent with sexual purity and morality. And here again, I take a little bit of umbrage. She seems to turn her nose down at women who call it freedom to use their bodies in whatever way they choose. But then she goes ahead and she lumps together all sexual things, like fornication, sex trafficking, pornography, abuse, and war crimes are sort of all lumped together. And then she says, is this freedom? Well, of course, almost anyone would say that sex trafficking is not freedom. But how are premarital sex, consensual sex, and sex trafficking even in the same space together? I have rarely, if ever, had a nuanced discussion about sex or sexuality within a church-sponsored forum. I think we do ourselves a disservice by conflating everything sexual that's not heterosexual married intimacy. We put all these pieces together and just kind of label them as bad, when I think we would do well to pull them apart and examine them individually. I will give a nod, however, to one thing that Mormons do really well, and that is what President Eubank mentions as well, is holding both men and women to sexual standards. I do think this is a positive thing. I won't go on too much further here because this, in my opinion, was a bit of a tangent in the talk, and you can look up people like Jennifer Finlayson Fife and Natasha Helfer Parker, who will give you a lot more insight on sex than I will in this podcast. So moving on to the most interesting part of her talk, at least in my opinion, and that is the lack of feminine language and words. She says, I think we need new language. I find that I don't have the vocabulary to talk about the things I want to talk about. There are no terms for these things. A good example is, we don't know what to call a mission president's wife. We don't know how to describe the role that she plays. We know in our gut that there is a role and that it is indispensable and that nobody else fills it if she's not there, but we don't know what to call it. We don't have the ability to talk about the feminine female contribution to priesthood. We have no words. She goes on to say, over the past several years, I have come to understand that the priesthood is the eternal power and authority of our Heavenly Father, suggesting that there is another power and authority on earth, that of our Heavenly Mother, wielded by her daughters. We are a faith community of priests and priestesses. And she leaves it there, doesn't go on to explain much further, but I do love the idea of finding words for female power and female authority. I love the idea of embracing the feminine divine and finding language around that. I'd love a great big discussion on the ways that we, her daughters, can use this power. Why don't we talk about this at church? And the bigger why aren't the leaders in the General Relief Society talking about this? Well, maybe they are. I certainly hope so, and I really hope they'll be sharing their thoughts with us. I have personally studied priesthood a lot, and this is in an effort to learn more about the power and the authority, and then to transpose it into the feminine. I know the difference between keys and authority. I know the difference between power and ordination. I know which men and boys have keys in my ward and which do not. But most women that I've talked to don't know these things. We don't learn the oath and covenant of the priesthood, and we are often ignorant on the processes of how to bless the sick or ordain other people. The church and the Relief Society could make lots of improvements, I think, in educating women about priesthood, and then maybe we, the women, could take the next steps for ourselves. Elder Oak says that women possess priesthood authority, but he doesn't explain it. And the word priesthood, of course, is masculine. And I am left feeling frustrated and sad that there are no leaders to guide us as daughters, and there are no forums to discuss this. I remember my sister, a Stake Relief Society president, telling me about the training that she had had with a member of the 70, a man. She asked him, why are you training us how to be Stake Relief Society presidents? Aren't there any women that could do this? He didn't have an answer, but obviously the answer is no. There are no female 70 to train Stake Relief Society presidents. Of course, all this starts in young women, and President Eubank makes mention of this. She talks about how the young men are setting up chairs, shoveling walks, blessing sacrament, and home teaching. And she continues with, we need to be more imaginative for our young women, that because they may be in danger of learning passive helplessness on their road to adult membership. As you may remember, Nylan McBain wrote an entire book about this called Women at Church. It's full of suggestions on how LDS people might better embrace young women and Relief Society women. It sits on the shelves at Deseret Book, but I have seen precious few of her ideas implemented. President Eubanks' answer to all of these questions about women and authority is to be patient and humble. My answer is, this clearly demonstrates the ongoing sexism within the Mormon Church. President Eubank concludes her talk with another very interesting idea, and this is partnership. She talks about the council approach. It's an idea which I have long loved. I see it working, however, really well only on the ward level. On the ward level, we see almost equal numbers of men and women talking and working together for the ward. On a stake level, it can sometimes work if you have a strong Relief Society president and a conscientious stake president. But above that, in my opinion, true and equal councils between men and women start to break down. I'll quote from her talk again. Before Joseph Smith died, he took the time to speak to the Relief Society and took the time to speak to the School of the Prophets. He basically told them the same thing. He quotes 1 Corinthians and says, "The eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you." And then he writes in 1839 from Liberty Jail, what is now Section 121. He says the rights and the powers of the priesthood are inseparably connected with the powers of heaven and cannot be controlled or handled, but must be used instead by persuasion, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, and love unfeigned. And he told the exact same thing to the Relief Society when it was formed. Before she concludes, President Eubank answers the question, is this a woman's church? She says a resounding yes. For me, I would say not yet, but maybe it could be. That's it for today. May God lead you and guide you and walk beside you and help you find your way. And now for those of you who are still interested, I'll read my media statement regarding my situation with the Exponent 2 magazine, which was sent on December 1st of this year. I love everything about the Exponent 2, the mission, the magazine, the blog, the women's voices, and most of all, the women. The slide into taking the money was incremental. Still, I was shameless and arrogant. I acted selfishly and without regard for others. What makes it worse is that Exponent 2 was a family to me. They trusted me with an opportunity to be part of an amazing organization, and I betrayed them. The donors trusted me too, and I betrayed them as well. These funds were given to further the organization's mission, and I used them foolishly for my own personal gain. I acted outside the boundaries of society's morals and norms. I went against my own moral compass, the things I value, such as honesty, trust, and loyalty. Opportunity, pressure, and rationalization, which are present in almost all crimes of this nature, were certainly present for me. The opportunity and the financial pressure were in my life. The rationalization grew within me as my behavior continued. As part of my rationalization, I pushed aside the details, and only later, after the audit, was shocked to realize that I had stolen over $100,000. I am now working with a therapist to help me untangle the reasons for my rationalization and betrayal of trust. I have learned more about accountability in the last year than in all my life. I have learned about owning up to my flaws. But the fact that there are reasons why this happened doesn't lessen the harm I caused the organization, the betrayal of my close friends, the hurt I caused my family. It doesn't change the fact that I'm completely accountable for my immoral actions. I allowed myself to make terrible mistakes. I regret this, and I'm truly sorry. Even when the money is repaid, I understand there are things that can never be replaced. Goals the organization may have reached if all the funds were there. Work that might have been done if trust had been maintained. Time that was given to this process that might have been spent on growing the organization. And of course, relationships that could have remained strong and rewarding. I wish I had had the courage to find a different way. And also the courage to disclose things more quickly than I did. But now I can only move forward. I have put mechanisms in place to ensure that this does not happen again. And I am working hard. I've always been committed to restitution. and I am ready to accept justice in whatever fines and punishments the court see fit to place on me. My belief in Christ and his grace remains strong. I wish only now to walk the path of redemption.